Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have Zane Rubin on the podcast. She is a writer, director, producer, actress, showrunner, but she is really excellent at all those things. Matt had seen one of her shorts on Short of the Week, and he told me to watch it, and we were both like, oh man, she is very, very talented. She has like such a strong voice, a really strong visual style. A really unique kind of viewpoint on things. It's funny because like the subject matter feels familiar, but her take
on it, so good.
Yeah, it feels so her, I guess, which is weird to say because I didn't know her before tonight.
Yeah. I think meeting her and talking with her, it just made all of those films make sense. And, you know, just a really exciting filmmaker to get to talk to. You know, it's funny. I think Zane is unlike most of the other filmmakers that we talk to lately, because, you know, typically we're talking to someone who's got something to promote or that we know in some way, or there's a couple, you know, a few lines of connection. And Zane, I literally just cold emailed because I thought her work was so awesome. And so it was a real treat to just kind of be a fan of a person and then get to talk to them on a podcast. We talk about all sorts of things, how she puts together such an awesome cast, how she developed her voice, and the fact that she got started at a very young age, which, you know, when typically people say that, they're like, oh, I got started as a kid or whatever, you kind of roll your eyes and you're like, yeah, like we all made videos in our backyard. But Zane was like into it for real in a meaningful way, very young.
Yeah, and at the age of 15, she pretty much was like, I am going to be a filmmaker.
Yeah, and also was making films.
Right.
Early, like her first films were like, they were on 5Ds, yes, but like...
She made a feature in the age of 16.
At 16, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
She's also the youngest guest we've ever had on the podcast.
Yeah.
By far, which is interesting because I think it kind of gives a perspective on... It's like she's part of that generation, I would say, that isn't like, wow, look at all these cameras we have to make movies with. It's like
she's
literally
making movies with the cameras that are around.
Yeah. Like when she made her first movie, it was on the 5D, and she's like, oh yeah, here's the 5D, you know? It was like a free thing that you could borrow.
She wasn't like, I'm part of the digital revolution.
Right. There's no pride in it. And it was just, and I don't mean that in a negative way. There is just like a...
You're just shooting with the cameras that people shoot with. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a fun perspective, and it's kind of what makes her special as one of our guests. But before we get into talking to Zane, Matt, you had a topic you wanted to speak about.
Yeah. So, I have been kind of writing and sending things out, and I think we're kind of both in the same zone of like, you know, you meet with some people and you pitch them a couple ideas, you follow up with a few emails, that sort of stuff. And so now I'm in that position where I've sent out a few emails and I haven't heard back yet, but it's still within the window of like, oh, well, they probably just haven't even read it yet. Normally, this is a frustrating thing for writers, but like, you know, you spend so much time crafting things and getting everything perfect and you're so proud of it. And then you hit send, and especially with my agent and manager, I'm like 12 hours later, like, well, they didn't even like it. When, of course, they haven't even had time to read it. So much stuff to read.
Don't you wish everyone would just say like, hey, got this, going to try to read it over the weekend?
Yes. Or, hey, got this. My weekend reads are full for the next 2 months. I'll get back to you on the 31st.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to be better about, even our listeners, they'll send us things. And I'm trying to be better about saying, like, hey, thanks for sharing. I'm going to check this out when I can.
Yeah.
You know, but at least acknowledging receipt is like actually a surprisingly easy and very nice and appreciated thing you can do.
And also not a thing that people do that often. It's okay. Industry standard. Sometimes some people are like, okay, got it. And some people, they just will email back when they have their thoughts. But so, Oren, how long do you wait after you send someone something to read? How long do you wait before you follow up to be like, hey, just wanted to circle back and hear your thoughts on this?
Honestly, I mean, if it's a friend of mine or someone I know well, I'll probably like text them a follow up. And if they don't answer that, I probably will just stop. And then next time I see them at a party or an event, it'll be really awkward.
It'll be weird. Yeah, cool.
And that's happened many times. If it's someone I don't know, I will probably wait a week and then try to find something relevant that's mm-hmm. new information. It's kind of like, when you apply to college, you know, if you get rejected and you appeal, like the number one rule is you can't appeal with just the reasoning of why you should get in. You have to appeal with new information.
Right.
Hey, I just got an AP score back, or
right.
I just got this award or whatever. So that's to me the same with pitching. It's like the worst thing is to write back to them and be like, hey, so what'd you think? And the best thing is to be like, hey, the actress we have attached just booked this big thing. This might be great timing. Whatever.
Well, and I also having agents and managers, that's their job is to do that stuff. So that's part of it. And people will always get back to you. I'm just impatient.
In this business, it's always the exact same thing. It's like you're freaked out that nothing's happening and then everything happens at the same time.
I'm ready.
So, yeah. Well, cool. Well, I hope you get some emails back. I hope I get emails back. I feel like sending people documents. I'm just like,
it's the worst.
Nobody wants to look at documents.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get into our chat with Zane, I wanted to remind people of two things. Number one, iTunes reviews. Please, they're still very important. If you didn't leave one for us during our big competition, please leave one for us because it helps people find the show.
And on the topic of my neuroses, I've noticed that I think both of them, both the review and the ratings, are both like right on the cusp of round numbers. Much more satisfying numbers. So like, just kind of like help out my OCD and like make it from 169 to 170 or whatever it is. I don't remember what they are exactly, but like they're both.
That's a really compelling reason to leave us a review.
Really is driving me nuts, you guys.
Okay, I guess I'll leave us another review myself. Matt got mad at me when I did that last time. Also, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a way that many of you are already doing, but can help throw a few bucks at the podcast per month to help us pay for all our things. If you feel like you get anything out of this podcast, even 1 out of 5 episodes, even if you only catch it when you want to, but you got that tip that got you that pitch, mm-hmm. that got you that job, then, you know, help us out. Patreon.com/justshootitpod.
It's like buying one of us a coffee once a month. Not even both of us.
But anyway, thanks again. And if you don't, that's fine too. And finally, before we talk to Zane, we just have one more message. Hey, so we're here with Zach Lipovsky, the creator of the new app Shotlister that helps you out with your shot lists on set. Can you tell us how you came up with it?
Sure. I mean, I was on set making my first movie and couldn't really believe there was no normal way of making shot lists. Pretty much everyone does it their own way. And you basically print out an Excel spreadsheet and then scribble all over it as the plan goes to pieces. And I was basically like doing the math in the margins of the piece of paper on the back of my AD, trying to figure out like how many shots we could do before the end of the day, and just figured there has to be a better way of doing this.
Yeah, but Zach, don't you think that you miss out on the bonding experience of losing your shot list and asking all of the crew members and then them kind of looking disappointed in you because you're their leader? Like, that's an important part of filmmaking for me.
Shocking. Yeah, I don't actually miss that, you know, but it's a good point.
I'm always asking, I'm like, can someone please give me a copy of the shot list? And like, and I'll ask it 3 or 4 times throughout the day, and at the end of the day, I look in my pocket and there's like 4 copies of it in there.
With Shotlister, you can just sync it to all of your crew, so they all have it on their phones.
Perfect, so you can borrow their phones when you lose yours.
Yeah, if you lose your phone, you can still find it.
Why does shot lister work better than printed out paper?
Well, it does a bunch of things. Not only is it the best way of building a shot list, you can build it digitally and customize it and everything, but it allows you to also build a shooting schedule where you can kind of, basically kind of like a one-liner, but for shots, where you can add time to each shot and how long you think it's going to take, and then you can change it with just a flick of the finger as everything completely goes to crap once you're shooting.
And is that not something that your AD would usually take care of?
Yeah, I mean, you can do it together. You can create the shot list, and then you can make the AD the author of it, and they can change it, you know, as you go. You can basically, sometimes it's the DP doing it. You know, everyone does it differently.
And you yourself have directed a couple of movies for Disney. You had a movie at TIFF, obviously a filmmaker yourself. And you find that it helps you on set?
I don't know how people shoot without it. Because it allows you basically to visualize your shoot day rather than just guessing how you're doing. You have a very concrete visual of how you're doing. And that allows you to kind of basically prioritize stuff you really need and put the stuff you don't at the end. And as that changes, you know, move it around. So that's really, really helpful.
And do you think it's helpful even for a small kind of crew, someone just starting out with their buddies?
Actually, most of our people are small crews because they don't have an AD and they're also the director and they're also doing craft services. And so they need something they can rely on because they don't have a lot of crew to rely on.
So, Zach, you've decided to give away 100% free 50 copies of Shot Lister every month, even if you're listening to this show again in 2020.
2020 actually isn't that long from now.
I guess that's true.
That's not true. 25-25, go with that. Every month we're going to give away 50 copies. So if someone is listening to this and they email justshootitpod@shotlister.com and says, you know, what platform they want, we have Mac OS, Android, and iOS, and whatever platform exists in the year 2525, and then we'll just send you a free copy. We get 50 away months, so if there's ones left, send us an email.
And that sounds crazy, but I think there's a really smart tactic to it. And basically, the way it boils down is as soon as you're into this app, as soon as you adopt it as part of your shooting process, you become an evangelist.
A lot of people who use it end up telling all their friends, and they want their crew to use it, and they want their AD to use it. So we're giving you a free copy so you can use it, and it's a fully free copy. It never expires or anything. And then, you know, if you love it, tell your friends.
That is putting your money where your mouth is, Zach. I love it. So if you are listening to this podcast, even months from now, even years from now, email justshootitpod@shotlister.com for your free copy of Shotlister.
And finally, here's Zane Rubin. So you're a filmmaker, writer, director, producer, actress, actor? What do you prefer, actor?
Sure, I'll take the male version. I'll take actor.
I think actor's like neutral, right?
Yeah, I mean actress, I'm like, do we need it?
Yeah, I think actress is like passé now. Yeah.
I like actress because it's more descriptive than actor.
Well, actress implies like a whole, you yeah. know, like a whole thing.
What? The only argument I've heard that was kind of not a bad argument was that you say doctor and not doctress.
Doctress?
Doctress is very
funny,
though.
I actually kind of like that. That's great.
I can't wait to see your latest short, Zane. Doctress.
Doctress.
So tell us. I saw just a short of yours on Short of the Week, Vimeo Staff Pick, one of those.
Short of the Week.
Short, super great.
Thanks.
Killer cast. And it kind of like, I saw that piece and I was like, oh, you're interesting.
Wait, which one did you watch?
Yeah,
which
one? Good Dinner Party?
Good Dinner Party. Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
If you're at a computer, by the way, go to ZaneRubin.com right now.
Yeah, take a look at
R-U-B-I-N.
Your stuff.
R-U-B-I-N.
The tricky thing with Good Dinner Party is that like there's a million shorts out there that started at a dinner party and then things go crazy.
Yeah.
And so the deck was stacked against you.
Yes.
And it's still good.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I've made a lot of shorts that are two-person scenes. They've basically like all been two, maybe three-person scenes, just because like that was what I could do.
Sure.
That was what I could afford to do because it just costs no money and it's easy and it takes, you know, 4 hours and you're done. But then I was kind of like, oh, well, I want to do something that's more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So I think dinner table scenes are kind of like the car chases of comedy.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So I thought that would be an interesting way to sort of challenge myself. But unfortunately, we only shot for one day.
And would remind me, how many people are at the table?
Eight.
Eight, yeah.
Including myself. So it was like it was basically impossible to direct it. It was like things were going on at the other side of the table that I had no idea were happening until
like
post, because the takes were like 15 minutes.
Oh, right.
You did the whole thing in one take?
For a couple angles, yeah. And then...
And how many cameras were you rolling?
Two.
Two. Yeah, great.
Yeah, and... yeah, I mean, we just didn't get the amount of coverage that I probably would have liked to get. I would have liked another day or another, you know, 10 days to shoot.
It's so hard to articulate how boring and laborious dinner table scenes can be. You know, like, it's so much. You really kind of have to, like, take them in smaller bites, you know? You almost, like, make them into scenelets or something. So it's interesting that you did them as long, full takes. Did you find... how did the day evolve? Like, did it get better? Did it get worse? Or was there like an ebb and flow to how you picked your coverage in it?
Well, we basically just did the coverage I had shot listed for the most part. But as the day went on and we ran out of time and we were being like, you know, pushed out of the location, I kind of just picked and chose what stuff of each actor I wanted to get in their kind of close-up angle. But, I mean, everybody was really good.
I want to just say kind of the log line real quick of the short, which I just watched it actually like an hour ago. So
great.
I know it really well, probably better than you.
Probably. I blocked it out.
But it's about a dinner party where one couple suggests that they try to all have an orgy together. And everyone's into it except for Zane's character.
Right. So I guess the premise isn't super original, but the thing that I like to do, at least with shorts, not with the longer stuff I'm writing that nobody's seen yet, but with shorts, is take a premise that's like maybe just kind of like blah, like not really much, and then kind of put my own spin on it. There's a thing in female comedy where it's so sex-based because for so long, women weren't allowed to talk about sex. And that was just not a thing. And then all of a sudden, they could. And then all of comedy just became about like, oh, I masturbate. And I'm like, yeah, cool. So does everybody else. That's like not that original. but good for you.
Yeah.
And that's like a bit. Like, it's just like, oh, I love sex. Like, that's not a joke. It's not anything.
Right.
Right.
I'm happy that's you like sex.
Like, I see like older writers or kind of from like an older generation make jokes about like, oh, they were just tweeting all day. Like, that's like a punchline to something. But that's like.
Yeah, totally.
That is what people are doing.
Right.
Sending each other messages on Snapchat is not like a joke.
Sure. Yeah,
it's just people living.
Yeah.
When I started making things, I was not in any kind of relationship and felt very unseen. You know, in a romantic and sexual way. And then all female comedy was like, nah, sex. And I was like, not everybody's having it. Some of us are sad and alone. And then I kind of wanted to make things that combat that. So The Last Virgin in LA was a short I made, and that I made when I was a virgin. And those were the kinds of conversations that people would have around me. They'd be like, oh, you should just go away while we talk about sex because you haven't had it. And that'll make you feel better being in a corner.
Sure.
And I'm like, no, it doesn't. But thank you for taking me out of the conversation.
So Zane, I want to back up a little bit because I think there's so many things to unpack here. What's fascinating the most to me about this is that like you look through all of the things that you have on your website and like there's such a clear voice already, right? And I think part of that is thanks to you being, you know, the writer, director, performer, right? Like you star in everything that you do, basically, give or take.
Not
maybe.
Everything. I made a Comedy Central web series that I did not star in.
Oh,
I
that's
acted
right.
in one of the episodes.
Right, right.
And then like all the stuff that I'm currently developing, basically all of it, I would say, you know, most of it is not for me to star. Because at a certain point, it's just like, you know, I want to tell whatever story. Sometimes I don't fit into that.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
There did seem to be like a common theme throughout your work. which is all these really cool sexual people talking, and then we cut to you.
Me just being on the outside. Yeah. Well, I think it's just feeling just all your life like you're on the outside, you know? In just every way. Nobody likes you. You're offensive. Like, I'm offensive. I say the wrong things. You know, I'm not whatever enough. But it's also just, I think, a different female voice that, for some reason, doesn't seem to exist. You know, there's like, there's male schlub, but there's not so much like female schlub. But
you're,
I want to be,
you're the female Seth Rogen.
But I want to be hot too.
Oh, there you go.
I want to be Seth Rogen GQ.
You mentioned earlier when you got started, right? Mm-hmm. So on your website it says you got started at 15.
Well, so in my early teens, I, like from, I guess like 12, 13, 14, 15, I really wanted to be a comedian. I was really, really into comedy.
Where are you from? LA. Where'd you grow up? You grew up in LA.
Yeah. And, for a while I was writing stand-up. It was all about suicide. Found those journals later on. Oh boy. You know, when I don't keep a journal because I don't want anybody to read it, including myself, in the future.
Sure,
like 12 hours go by and I'm like, oh my God, this is dark. Woo. So that's why I don't keep a journal anymore. But yeah, so I wrote stand up and I took like improv classes and stuff. And I thought that that's probably what I was going to do. And then I did have some kind of fascination and, you know, acting, but there was just like no roles for people.
Was your family in the business
like
at all?
My dad has had a very tumultuous, struggling, long career in comedy.
As a comedian?
As in everything, you know, writer, actor, producer. He had a comedy magazine. He made videos.
Wait, what was his comedy magazine?
He had a comedy magazine.
Was it called Mad?
In the late 80s for a few years.
Wow.
Called Laugh Track that he made. It was like the first magazine. It was like four people in comedy, and then it had like joke articles, whatever.
A good joke.
He's done just about everything that you can do in comedy. But
so he had a little bit of guidance in terms of like, oh, like if you want to do open mics or things like that, he can kind of guide you in the right direction? Just an awareness that comedy is a job?
It was more just an awareness that it existed. And by the way, an awareness that it was a job. And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't the kind of thing where your parent is, you know, Judd Apatow, and you're like, oh, I can do that too. Mm-hmm. It was more like your parent is on the couch crying, and you're like, I might have to do that also. Oh, no.
Wait, but
help.
Do you guys, are you raised with laughing at home all the time, like making a lot of jokes?
Yeah, it was a very dysfunctional household. I think all of us probably had our own cocktail of mental illnesses going on that we didn't quite realize until later. But yeah, we're the kind of family that, like, you know, in the midst of something horrible, we're already laughing. There was no plus time. You know, they say tragedy plus time equals comedy. It was just tragedy equals comedy immediately.
Just make
you
the joke.
Joking about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I think was really strange about our situation.
And so when did you make your first film?
When I was 15, I decided to make a short. And I really had no idea what directing was at that point. And then I think every film I made after that, I kind of came up with a new definition of directing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it kept going back and forth between, like, a director does nothing. What do they... Like, I think that was the first thought I had.
It does feel weird sometimes.
You're like, what do they do?
What am I doing?
I do
here?
Think the best directed stuff is when you feel like you're doing nothing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or the worst directed.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Every once in a while, I feel like the crew is judging me for not doing anything. Do you guys ever get that?
I have a big fear of the crew, of the cast. I also think that directing is an incredibly lonely job.
Sure, that's why we started the podcast.
For real. You show up to set,
yeah,
and you're like, hey, DP, what's going on? They're like, I'm setting up. And you're like, no, do you. Cool. And then you're like, go to the actor, and you're like, cool, what's going on? You need any help? They're like, I'm getting my makeup. I can't really talk right now. And you're like, yeah, totally, totally. You have fun. And then you're just like standing there and the AD's like, you cool? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm you're cool. Also like trying to desperately be everyone's friend because I think there's like some illusion in like the world of directing that like a really great director is just like so close with like the people on the set, right?
Boy, I hate when people are like, we're all best friends now. I hate
Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, like, you know, they're like
a panel afterwards. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the worst.
Are you best friends? You're best friends with all your cast and crew.
No. No, I mean,
I wanted you to be like, yeah.
One of my DPs is one of my best friends, yeah. And one of the actors I've used is one of my closest friends, or a couple of the actors.
And we're saying, yeah. I'm not saying that, like, obviously everybody works with their friends all the time, but I'm saying, like, it's annoying when you're at, like, a panel and you hear people talking about how they've all bonded so much. Like, yeah. That's not an interesting story, and it makes me jealous also. Well,
yeah. I mean, I hope to become friends with whoever. I need friends.
Right, on those one-day shoots.
Please contact me via my website. On like a one-day shoot, yeah, sure. I mean, there are people who you're like, oh, that guy was really pleasant. I really liked him a lot. But then sometimes there's also just like, you're like, you know, I've had things where like I thought I was, you know, I put like somebody who I was kind of friends with in something, and then I was like, well, we're not going to talk to that person anymore.
That was weird.
Like them.
Because I guess it is a strange thing also of like, you have to be their boss. You know, like if your friend isn't delivering, you still have to kind of like, you know, push them to get where they need to go. And that doesn't have to be adversarial, but it could be awkward, I guess, maybe.
I do think I've become good friends with a producer of mine, the guy who, his name is Rob Hatchmiller.
Yeah, I just worked with him.
Oh, he's great.
Do you know Zach
B, right?
Bornstein. Yeah. I don't know him, but
Rob just produced a short for him.
Yeah, Rob loves to take jobs that make him no money. He's a great guy. But he's somebody who I became friends with, but from making stuff together, not from I had known him before. And I think if you make something with someone and then you become friends and then you use them again, great.
That's a different.
How did you find him? I'm actually kind of curious. So Rob Hatchmiller, he's a producer. He produces all sorts of things, including independent, like very low budget short films.
Yeah.
The one that I worked on with Zach is like, had like an awesome cast. Avery Munson was in it. And,
yeah, I love Avery. Kate Micucci too,
Kate Micucci, yeah. And it's like, I feel like every filmmaker's dream is to find a producer that wants to produce and not direct, you know?
Yeah, he's great. He also directs documentaries, though, weirdly, with his wife, Paloma. They just directed a documentary that was at Tribeca. That's really wonderful.
Oh, cool. Actually. How did you meet him? How do you find a producer for a short film?
Weirdly, I know a lot of, like, producers who want to make things, but they don't have, I mean, they don't have, like, the money. They're just like, you get the money, I'll do the work, and I'll be there. Yeah, kind of a thing. But Rob actually saw my Comedy Central web series and was very new to LA from New York. And I think he was just kind of contacting people, like trying to meet people. He hustles, you know. Mm-hmm. And we just got coffee and he was like...
Like he just emailed you and was like, hey, I saw your series. Can we grab coffee?
Yeah. That's how I have most of my friends, which makes me sound bad, I will say. It sounds a little narcissistic, but that's how I meet people. Cool.
So let's back up then. How did you get your Comedy Central series?
Really boring. Just
a meeting.
Just a meeting. Yeah. Nothing.
How'd you get the meeting?
My manager.
How'd you get the manager?
I made 7 short films, and she finally saw one of them.
Did any of them go anywhere fancy or notable?
No. I have actually been rejected from every single film festival I've ever applied to.
100% across the board?
100%.
Because you only applied to like Sundance.
Oh, no. Oh, oh,
I can't
no.
imagine your shorts not getting into any festival because they're really
Thank you. I've gotten rejected from... I've gotten into one film festival, I will say. I did not apply, but I did get into one film festival. But technically, I have gotten rejected from every single one I've ever applied to.
What's the festival you got into?
Montclair.
Wait, do I know
New Jersey?
Ah, gotcha.
It's like very middle of the road.
And they saw it online or something?
No, Rob actually had his documentary was playing there, and he forced them to take it.
He's like, listen.
It was nepotism. He was like, dude, she's going to kill herself. She's on the brink here, and somebody needs to take this.
If we don't go to Montclair.
Wait, so your manager just saw it online?
Yeah, yeah, I had a friend of mine shared it on Twitter, and her
was your friend Jeanette McCurdy?
No, although she's actually the one I mentioned, who's one of the actors I've worked with, who's a very close friend of mine.
Oh, because she's famous, right?
She's very famous. She's very, very famous.
And the other,
you guys should have her on the podcast. She's a director now.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be great.
Do you know who she, do you know iCarly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What, she got one short of the week.
Oh, cool.
She has a short on there. Yeah.
I would argue that Short of the Week is like a prestigious online festival.
I will agree. Yeah, Short of the Week has put two of my things up, and No Budge put one of my things up. And those are, you know, like, those are the online film festivals.
But you also get way more eyeballs on your stuff from those than from, like, Newport Beach Film Festival.
Yes.
Or even Palm Springs or something.
Yeah.
That's true, but there's no networking aspect.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's a problem. You know, like, if like, let's say even me going to Montclair, which was fine, you know, like, everybody who goes to festivals is involved in other festivals, mm-hmm. and then that helps you get into more festivals, sure. and, like, it just kind of was like a domino effect. But if you don't get into any, you don't have any of those connections. And, like, you know, I would like to make a movie that gets into Sundance one day, and I can't even get into Boca Raton Jewish Film Festival.
Sure.
Yes, they've rejected me, I swear.
Well, it's probably because your stuff is fairly rated
SoCal
R.
SoCal Student Film Festival. Name a film festival, I promise they've rejected me. I mean, like, even, like, Maryland has rejected me three
CineQuest.
Times. They've rejected me twice. I mean, I'm sure, like, my Film Freeway account is just, like, the most depressing thing you've ever seen.
It's like a post-apocalyptic
endless,
freeway.
It's an endless scroll of not selected, not selected, not selected. And every day I get an email. I'm like, oh, I applied to, oh,
wait, but how,
I don't remember applying, but they don't want me.
A manager.
She saw my film online and her.
Which film?
Netflix and Chill. Did you guys see that?
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't see that one.
I made that film, and it got shared by a comedian friend, and her now husband saw it, who's a successful comedy writer, and she very much trusts his opinion, and mm-hmm. he was like, oh, Perry, this is really funny, you should look at it. And she was quitting UTA as an agent, about to become a manager, and, like, I was just, like, the first person she took on.
That is perfect, though. That is the exact sort of manager you're looking for, right? Someone who's hungry, someone who's connected, and someone who's building a roster. That's awesome.
Totally.
Okay, so you did a show for Super Deluxe. You did a show for Comedy Central, and you also mentioned you did a show for Jesh, right? So what are you? How are you getting all these shows? So you're getting the meetings through your manager, and what are you saying when you go to these meetings? Are you pitching your own ideas?
Yeah, the Super Deluxe one, I was there initially for a general to do, you know, TV and film stuff, and I saw that I knew they had money, and I was like, okay, I want to get some of that. So I was like, what is something Super Deluxe-y that I could pitch them? And I just, off the top of my head, I had made this short film called R.I.P. Love that was really bad and super low budget. And so I just kind of came up with, oh, what if we expanded that? What if it was every episode I die in a
it's
different
R.I.P.
way?
This, R.I.P. that,
embarrassment or whatever. And then the Comedy Central thing, you know, I had had the idea initially, you know, it was something that I felt, you know, I was really crazy in my relationship. But I didn't want to have it with a female protagonist because I felt that might be kind of sexist. Like, oh, like, crazy girl, she's she's too clingy. And I was like, that's not super fun. So then I kind of thought about what it would be like with a guy. And then we pitched it, like, two other places, and I was kind of shocked Comedy Central wanted it.
So what was your pitch? It's just a show about a clingy guy?
You know, I had all the episodes worked out, and, like, this is what happens in this episode, this is what happens in that episode, and here's the log line, and, you know, I'm always coming up with, you know, new stuff. I'm essentially just, like, in a constant state of waiting to pitch things, you know. I always have, like, plenty of things. That's just the hardest part is getting in the room to pitch the thing, and then them saying, you know, yes.
It's so funny, because I feel like the longer you work in this business, like, those two things, like, totally swap switch positions. Like, it gets way easier to get into the rooms, but, like, you get way less excited. Like, you have less than 100 ideas.
You get a little more precious, too, because you're like,
I've seen that before. I've done that before. This isn't,
Sure.
Like, am I really going to, like, how much am I going to make on this thing? You know what I mean? There's a little bit of that.
Yeah, like, right. What's their budget?
But you're giving me a knowing look. You're already there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I've three times I've worked in the $15,000 range and
per episode.
Yeah,
for like a 5 to 10 minute film thing.
Or yeah, whatever. And like, you know, I don't make any money. Yeah. And I work really hard and for a long time, too. And when it's when I'm hired as the director for that and they're a company and the company pays me a very little sum. I just got paid $500 to direct something and it was like months of work.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just like,
this is a joke. Really?
Was it something you wrote?
No.
Oh, really? So you've directed other people's things, too?
Just recently. Yeah, I'll send it to you guys.
So Matt and I both saw your stuff. Matt kind of showed me your stuff. And I think both of us had the same reaction, which is like, damn, this is really good. We're so jealous
that so good.
You have such a well-defined voice. Yeah. And I want to get a little bit into your visual style, too, because I think that...
Yeah, there's a lot of like consistent. Looking directly into the lens, which is interesting, and or like off axis.
No over-the-shoulder shots, like no handheld.
I can be honest about the so the way the visual style started was I am a Jewish person who does not look good being shot from any angle except for the front. So that's,
oh, that's
how
so funny.
The style evolved.
So you're like, well, we'll shoot everyone.
I was like,
front.
How do we make me look, oh, you know, from but the front, about... I'm not so bad. Let's just
but
do
what
that.
About over-the-shoulder shots? Those are even more concealing.
I think I did those, I think, you know, in early work they existed, and then I think at a certain point I was like, everybody does those, that's maybe not so interesting. Yeah. What can I do that's more interesting? And then also I think I always liked putting myself in this position where like people were ganging up on me, and that's just more fun if you're doing these POV shots and they're literally looking at you like all angry, and you're like, because that's how it feels, you know. So that's how I, you know, ended up there. And then as far as like not wanting to do handheld again, it was like comedy handheld, been there, done that, not so interesting. You know, comedy can look really, really shitty, and I'm like, I want to make pretty movies that happen to be funny.
Right, because your stuff is really well art directed. You know, like the background, every frame has a lot of depth. The composition is nice.
Thanks.
The wardrobe is cool.
And I will give credit in terms of art direction initially to my DP Tanner Hall. Really great. He shot, the first thing he shot for me was Netflix and Chill, and the crew was literally just him. That was it.
Awesome.
And
he did sound too.
There was one guy. There was one guy holding a mic, but he lit the whole thing. He worked the camera. He would move around all the furniture and paintings and plants to make sure the frame was full.
Did you know him?
He had been dating my sister a couple months, and he was the first cinematographer that I really met, who was like an actual cinematographer.
Awesome.
And I was like, I'm going to take advantage of this. And I did.
Wait, they still don't break up with him.
No.
But you still work with him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's been hard. but yeah, he's great, and he's like, he's a workhorse. Like he can do the job of 12 men. I did that music video with my sister actually, and he shot that, and he managed to get a Alexa Mini anamorphic package left over on like a weekend.
Yeah.
And we just went to the desert and we shot it, and he was the only one, and he's out there just like setting things up and like moving around, and
go
like
for it, Tanner.
Yeah. And it's insane, and you watch it and you're like, this is beautiful. How did he do this? But he's wonderful, you know. So I learned a lot from him about real filmmaking, because prior to that I had been very mumblecore, run and gun, you know, whatever. And then
yeah, your stuff does not feel mumblecore at all to me.
Well, that's kind of how I started, but then I realized that, you know, mumblecore's dead and nobody wants that. Because basically when, you know, the Alexa Mini took off, people were like, oh, we have nice cameras that we can,
we're not hiding things anymore.
Things can look nice, and that's a good thing. And then Yeah, so that's when my stuff really started looking okay. And then that short looks okay. I mean, it's shot on a Blackmagic Mini, the little tiny one.
Yeah.
And
the pocket.
It's shot on the pocket. Yeah.
I've never shot with that camera.
Netflix and Chill Your Time.
Yeah, and then the one after that, that's when I met my boyfriend, who had wanted to help me make something that was actually well produced, and that's when I had more of a crew that was more than two people. Mm-hmm. Was the Netflix or the Last Virgin in LA was. We had like a 6-person crew, and that was a big step up.
And let me ask, because I feel like I recognize and love most of your cast. It's like, I'm like, oh, like I love Whitmer Thomas is in a thing of yours.
Oh, yeah, he's so
Jake
funny.
Wiseman is so funny.
Yeah.
Brody Reed is, yeah, like there's a bunch of people out there, right? So,
mm-hmm. Alan McLeod is a doll.
Wait, who? Sorry?
Alan McLeod.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Alan McLeod is.
He's wonderful.
So funny.
So nice and
Luke
so
Taylor
funny.
Luke Taylor Pucci? Anyway.
Yeah.
I could keep going, right? How do you. Is it that you have personal relationships with these people? How are you going about casting? How are you getting these people?
Because
I think that's the other thing that's part of this style.
Most of the time.
Your casting is really good.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think that's my biggest skill as a director. And
I
want is to become so successful that I get a call and it's like, you know, whoever director and like, who do I put in this role? I'm like, let me handle it. I'll have it worked out in 10 minutes. I'll give you a call back.
Like Last Virgin in LA is like so well cast, I feel like.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, they're all good.
Yeah, that's
the guy especially is super funny.
The boyfriend, Josh.
Well, he's like a movie star.
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go. So how did you get him?
It was really weird. I was in this little web series called The Skinny years ago. And he, when he was just starting out, had like a, you know, like a 4-line role in it, whatever. And when I watched the whole series, I was like, that guy's fucking good. Who is he? And I was like, oh, I need a boyfriend. And I saw he was in some little indie movie and I didn't know how big his role was in it. And it wasn't out yet. And it was called Moonlight. And so I just tried to get in touch with him. And I went on IMDb Pro and I found his contact.
Is that who he is? He's the middle?
Oh, yeah.
He's the main guy in the middle section.
Yeah. And now he's starred in a couple other movies too.
Sure.
So yeah. I called this number and I was like, hi, is Ashton there? And they were like, this is his grandpa. He's not here right now. And I spent like weeks trying to get in touch with him, and his email didn't work and his phone was off and his internet ran out. And it was
just
all,
like, this is all IMDb Pro, or how are you getting
just
Google
off
stalking.
Of there. Yeah. And
wait, he has his grandfather's phone number on IMDb Pro.
It was like his phone had died, so I had to call another phone. That was like his grandpa. Okay. It was like really weird. And like he had initially said yes when I sent it to him, and then like I didn't hear from him and I couldn't get in touch with him, and it was like the dates were approaching and I was like, hey man, what's going on? And he was like, oh yeah, I'm still in, sorry, like my computer broke, my internet died, and I lost my phone. I was like, oh cool, great, I'm not worried about you not showing up.
but he did
show up, and he was super nice. He was the best actor I had ever worked with up till that point. He's still, you know, in top two with Lou Taylor Pucci. You know, there's another echelon of acting where you're like, holy fuck. Like, and they're both in that echelon. And I mean, they're both movie stars, so it makes sense.
Sure.
They can carry a film, and there's a reason why they can carry a film. I mean, they're both wild cards as human beings, but that's like part of the charm, you
that's
know?
The
you're
point.
Like, did
yeah.
you read the script? And like, yeah, I read it a couple months ago. And then you're like, they just jump in and they know all the lines.
Yeah.
And you're like, but how does that work?
Yeah.
But yeah, he ended up showing up, and then like 2 months later, Moonlight came out and he was a huge star, and it was really weird.
Great.
Actually, just to stop you real quick, is your dialogue feels very naturalistic, especially when you're talking. Is it all pretty much like scripted to the T?
Yeah, I'd say 90% scripted. You know, like I'm always like, if you want to add or subtract to a line, feel free. But when I first started with the more kind of mumblecore style, I would do all improvised. And I quickly realized that it just goes off in its own direction. And it becomes impossible to cut. And it's just like, yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty much scripted. Yeah.
I want to go back to the casting thing. Are the other stories similar to that, where it's just like you just figure out a way, or is it?
Lou was a friend of a friend, I think.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like personal connections, basically.
Jeanette's a friend.
Yeah.
And then Skylar was the other blonde girl in Last Virgin. That one, we just really went through her agent, and I can't believe she said yes. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't do a casting session, you just saw her
somewhere? No, I've never had anybody audition, and that's how I get such good people. I don't really believe in that. It's never been a problem for me. I've never run into, like, oh, shit, this person's terrible. There's been people who I'm like, okay, he's not as good as I wanted him to be. All right, okay, we're going to get through this. And then, you know, we cut around it. I've worked with people who don't act, have never acted, will never act again, and are really ashamed of the film. And we made it work.
That was a real curveball. You were setting up, like, and they were terrible.
And they were fun. You know, like, yeah. I mean, like, we were able to cobble something together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just experience, right? Like, you just figure out, like, what you need, right? It's kind of like the version of the tabletop story you were telling earlier. Just like, okay, just get your moments, and then you know you can make it work in the end.
Yeah.
Well, so what's next?
Yeah.
You know, I think this is probably something you guys can relate to on some level, or maybe could at some point, but I've made a lot of things for no money. I can't really do that anymore. The favors.
Sure.
We've gone through those, you know?
Especially also, you're in a really funny place where, like, you're doing stuff for major companies. Like, it's easy to be like, hey, like, this is a passion project. Let's all get together and do this thing. But you can't be like, and also it's for Comedy Central.
Right. Well, that's the thing is, like, the people I use, you know, I just did something for Jash, and I hired a DP who ended up paying out of pocket to get the shots we want.
I'm like, ugh.
Makes me feel so fucking shitty. Yeah.
For the Jash thing?
Yeah. Like, I don't want you to pay out of pocket. Oh, God. And as he was telling me that, we pulled up to his car and he had just gotten a ticket.
Oh, that's brutal.
And I was like, oh, classic. My God. I'm so sorry. And he's like, it's fine.
Is there, like, any other kind of genres or anything that you want to explore? I guess all the stuff I've seen of yours is very, like, relationship based.
Yeah, well, right now I'm me and my boyfriend are writing a movie. I have this, it started with the fact that I had this recurring nightmare that I'm back in school and I can't leave. And
I have a similar nightmare.
It's fairly common.
Where I haven't done a certain requirement for school.
Yep, same thing. Yeah.
And I know that my life is gonna happen as soon as I, like, take this stupid thing, but I don't get to go, because I moved to LA after high school. And I'm like, I know there's something out there that I want. It's the worst. Anyway.
Well, mine's similar because I never finished high school. So
way to bury the lead.
I'm back in high school and they found out that I never finished. And I'm like, but I'm 22. I have a whole life and a whole career. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, no, you have to start from where you left off. And I'm like, I'm only a sophomore? And then it's just like classic, like, just screaming into the abyss.
Like, no.
But so I wanted to make a film that was like a horror movie about somebody trapped in a high school. And so I wrote this film. I wrote a few drafts and it was terrible. It was really...
Is it good now?
Really bad. So my boyfriend read it and he was like, yeah, it's funny. And I was like... Yes, I was supposed to have a little humor. Sure. He's like, no, it's funny. And I was like, okay, all right, I get it. I know what you're trying to say. My leap, like, to genre didn't go as well as I might have hoped.
And it's not scary.
It just, like, didn't work. It just didn't work. And I see that now. But then I was like, okay, well, help me. Because, like, I'm very confident in writing shorts, web series, pilots, TV, that kind of stuff. When it comes to features, I've written probably 20 really, truly bad ones, like not even to the point where I would ever show anybody any of them.
That's a lot of features.
Yeah.
They don't exist. I don't even have them on my computer. They're just, like, gone. Like, it's no one needs to see that ever. But with this, I was like, I like putting this woman in a high school. And then weirdly, as we kept talking about it, it became something completely different. It became about this codependent relationship between a mother and a son, who were these characters that already existed. And essentially about this mother who has a history of a kind of sexual abuse, and she's really, really close with her son. He's a great kid and blah, blah, blah. And one day she gets a call that her son has sexually assaulted somebody at school, and she defends him.
Yeah.
So that's...
So not funny.
Not funny. Not funny. It's a hoot. Yeah, not really funny, but also, like, my mom and my brother are weirdly close and tell each other a lot of things. On Mother's Day, like, we're, like, it's, like, me and my sister and my brother and my mom were in the car, and, like, my brother will, I'll be like, what happened with that girl you were seeing? He's like, oh, I don't like her. And I was like, you seem to not like a lot of the girls. I'm like, why are you always breaking it off with people? You just gotta, like, power through. So you find someone. And then he was like, I didn't like her vagina. And I was just like, what? What was wrong with it? And he was like, I just didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. And then I started getting scared about my vagina. Besides the
sure
point.
You're like, well,
I'm like, what could be wrong with a vagina?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. So I actually do have something wrong with my vagina, but that's a whole other story, and I am writing something about that.
Oh, good.
That is
teeth
too, starring my vagina. But anyways, my brother are really close, and he tells her, like, any kind of, like, sexual thing that happens to him, or, like, any, like, he'll tell her that
so
he doesn't like the girl's
knew.
Vagina.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mom's, like, laughing, and that's, like, a normal conversation, because my family has no boundaries. I'm trying to learn to have them, but I just told you guys that my vagina doesn't work.
Sure.
It works now.
Sure, sure.
It works now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I like to talk about... So one project that I'm working on that I'm going to try and pitch to Comedy Central is about vaginismus. Do you guys know about vaginismus?
No.
Is that a holiday?
It is. It's right after Christmas.
In between Christmas and New Year's, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
It's a fun day where your vagina closes up for no reason. No. Vaginismus is... So when you have sex...
Yeah.
I'm just going to...
Sure.
So when you have sex, you're told, like, so, you know, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be a little painful, and it's going to go in there, and then
everyone
that's
told
what's going to happen.
Sure.
And you're like, okay, cool. I think I get it. I get the gist. And then you're me, and it doesn't go in there. It doesn't. It's like...
And, like, everyone's trying to figure it out. Like, what's
there's a
going
whole
on.
Team there.
Sure, sure.
Trying to put it in a stadium.
Yeah.
No, it just like it didn't go in, and it was just closed down there, like just like tapered off.
Yeah,
so
I'm familiar with it.
You are?
Yeah. I mean not that.
But so then I went to the doctor, and I was like, I made an appointment for them to look at it, and they wrote my appointment down wrong, and then they were like, do you want an STD test? And I was like, no, I don't. And they were like, no, you should really get one. And I was like, I don't need one. And they were like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't need one because I need you to look at my vagina because nothing can go in there. And because nothing can go in there, I definitely don't have an STD.
I'm good.
Bitch. Yeah, yeah. So would you look at my vagina? They didn't. Yeah. And then at the end of it, she said, I don't know what to tell you.
This some is the doctor?
This is the doctor. She goes, I don't know what to tell you. Some people come in here every day and, you know. Sometimes they don't even have a vagina. They get their period once a month, and turns out their vagina is actually their anus. That happens. So it could be that, but I don't know. Wasn't that. But
you're like, thanks, doc.
I cried for a few days after that. Vaginas and anus, that can happen. There's a lot of things they don't tell you. It wasn't that. And eventually I had sex, and I'm fine now. Everything's working properly.
There you go.
It just had to be slowly... stretched out. But that's the only project right now that I'm working on that is for me to act in and whatnot.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of humor there, right?
Yeah.
I think, like, you're going to take it to Comedy Central, right?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do right now. Yeah. I mean, I think it's very funny, but I feel like I made you a little bit uncomfortable and you very uncomfortable.
Well, I would say... it's weird to be on a podcast and not know what to say. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I think it's a great story. And I think, like, yeah, I think it's mostly just, like, you don't want to, like, be offensive on accident.
Some people have
told
me not to tell people. Because then people are like, what's wrong with your vagina? I'm like, nothing's wrong with my vagina. It was a temporary thing that was wrong with my vagina. Yeah. And it was been fine now.
Yeah, I guess you're welcome to. I mean, I guess the subject matter of our podcast tends to be a little more about, like,
filmmaking.
How you choose your shots.
Sure. No, hold on. I'm going to bring it back around, though. Because I think this is, because, you know, you were talking about a show that you're going to pick. Right.
But also what inspires you, which is this.
Right. Both of which, I think, part of what is interesting just talking to you is that, like, you're so quick and so open. That's great in the room. Like, of course you're selling things. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's such a premium on, like, personal experiences and point
yeah,
of view.
People like that.
They love that stuff.
Yeah.
So you can go in and, like, tell a funny story about your vagina that's interesting yeah. and unique.
Matt,
that's a show.
Matt told a vagina story in a pitch and it backfired.
Oh,
it
no.
did. It did. That's yeah.
What kind of vagina?
Just like a
when
standard,
you didn't like, yeah. did you say you didn't like it? Because that's bad. I would never say that. If you,
I just told my mom about
to
it.
To all the men out there, if you don't like a vagina, decide to like it, marry it, and never think
sure.
about it again.
There you go.
Never don't like a vagina.
For the record, I was not shit talking any vagina.
No. By the way, that's the only bad thing you could ever say about a vagina.
I want to go back a little bit broader real quick, because I feel like listeners at home are going to hear your story and they're going to be like, okay, like, she knew what she wanted to do, like, basically immediately
yeah.
started making things and it's, like, on the path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, selling right? stuff nonstop.
Yeah, you're just like, sure, I know you don't feel that way, but I guarantee there's, like, somebody in Wisconsin who's like, I would kill to lose money on a Comedy Central show. Do you know what I mean? So what would you say is, what's the secret to your success? What do you feel like, I know that's such a hard
question. Maybe a different version of
yeah.
that is, like, what were you doing that wasn't working that you changed that now works? Like, now you're kind of selling things and people are interested in what you have to say.
Well, I think it's just making things, you know.
Yeah.
If I attain any amount of success, it'll just be because I have made a lot of things. And for a very long time, you know, so there, as before we started the podcast, I said, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, are not on my website, you know, that mm-hmm. I made between the ages of 15 and, you know, 18, 16. Whatever. 15, 16. But, you know, that's like 5 short films and a feature I made when I was 16. And that was all, that was a lot of stuff. That's a lot of content.
How did you make a feature at 16?
I had made 3 short films and I decided that I wanted to not make another short film because I thought I had, you know, already been there, done that.
Yeah.
And what I realized is that I wasn't making them the right way at all. But at that point, the way I was working was improvise, camp, you know, mm-hmm. little Canon 5D, a mic sure. propped up against the sofa sort of a thing. And the feature, you know, was like 2-person crew. I had my friend in it and, you know, it's mumblecore-y. It's not
yeah.
very good. It's exists.
Still,
it's on YouTube.
It's incredible that you did that.
Minutes of it. I don't recommend anybody watch it, but
sure.
Yeah. So then that for me was one of the biggest learning experiences in just the fact of I can't do anything for no money again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about 8 months or so, I mean, I was crushed because the feature got rejected from every single film festival. And it was like, you know, a lot of work, even being me
sure.
16 and it being yeah. shitty or whatever. It was a lot of fucking work. And eventually I was just like, well, I guess I gotta continue making shit because mm-hmm. no one's knocking down my door for any reason. So then I made another short and, you know,
you just kept going. Yeah.
Yeah. And I always tried to, you know, reach out to people online, like, you know, that were more successful for me than me for advice, for mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best piece of advice you got?
I guess just find your voice and keep making things. You know, that's really that's really the way to do it. But the problem with, I will say, there's one downside in finding your voice. So I do think I have a very specific voice. And the things that I make, I keep trying to ring the same bell, right? Because I want people to go, oh yeah, that's Zane. This is the thing. This is what she does. I like it. I get it. But then very recently, I went out to pitch my first television show. And it was an idea that my boyfriend had had initially. And it was, you know, not in the Zane Rubin voice, but, you know, something I really liked a lot and I worked very hard on and felt like I could make into a really wonderful show. And it didn't sell because the reality is when people look at me, they see a certain thing and now I'm trying to go against that. And it makes it much harder to sell that thing if they haven't seen me do it and I'm not, you know, like insert famous person's name here.
Right, especially because it's your face and all of those
pieces. Totally, and it's something I'm not gonna act in.
What was the genre of the show you were pitching?
It was like a crime comedy. It was called Bureau of Bad News, and it was about this man and woman who team up to deliver bad news wrapped in silver linings. So essentially they investigate this person to find things out about them, so when they deliver the news that your dog died, they can soften the blow with
you've got a great personality,
whatever.
Though. Yeah.
Something that they've investigated about them.
Yeah. The average age of dogs is only 8 years. Yeah.
Whatever. So, so it was still like funny and weird and you know, that kind of a thing, but it was just a little bit different. And we teamed up with a really great production company, but it was also a stretch for the production company as well, because they hadn't done anything quite like that either. And so now with the, you know, I don't really like the idea of a show of being like, it's me and I'm just doing my thing. But that's kind of what I put that whole my vagina not working into, because I'm like, at least that's a little bit interesting. At least that's a little bit weird. And that's a show maybe I could actually sell, because it's like, oh, it's me and my weird voice and I'm in it. And the other shows that I, you know, have come up with are, you know, I have something about 13-year-olds and you know, that's not for me to be in, but that at least there's the angle of
an executive can be like, oh, you're young, you know, young people.
Totally. Right. So yeah, that's the angle we're going with on that. Is like, well, I'm really young and we want to make a realistic show about growing up in 2019.
Right.
And does your manager help you with, like, package these pitches, like figure out the pitches and everything?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Zane, this has been great.
Yeah, if people want to find out more about you, ZaneRubin.com, is that the best way?
ZaneRubin.com is the best way.
Okay, so ZaneRubin.com, people should check out. Do you tweet or do any of that?
I'm on the Twitter. Nobody follows me. I'd love to get another couple followers. Zane S. Rubin.
Zane's Rubin.
Zane's Rubin.
There we go.
I'll follow you.
Awesome.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, Zane, let's hop into unpaid endorsements.
Unpaid endorsements. So I've got two things. One of them is technically not an unpaid endorsement, not a paid endorsement. One of them is technically not a paid endorsement because I'm definitely not getting paid for it. But one of our previous guests has hooked me up with some new plugins that came out today to let me test them out from Red Giant. And it's called the VFX Compositing Suite. And it's like mind-blowing in a way that probably a lot of our listeners don't care about at all. But I'm sure almost everyone on our podcast, including Zane, has had to deal with like a green screen shot before.
No, actually.
You've never done a green screen shot?
I've never done green screen.
And you've never been like, well, we could just get that on green screen.
But with this VFX bundle, I will green screen all the time.
Well, the thing about green screen, it's just kind of become like a very normal tool in the same way that like a zoom lens has, you know, for filmmakers. And to get like a B level or even a B plus level of green screen comp, like in your edit, it's super easy, right? Anyone in Premiere can hit like key light and hit the green and then it looks like B plus level. But to get like an A plus level, like a Hollywood level green screen shot is like really, really, really hard because, you know, there's like light from what's behind the person wrapping around them and there's haze and there's fog and there's all these things that the way light works, like when you take a thing that wasn't actually where you're saying it is, it just doesn't look as real because you're getting it like 80% of the way there. But that last 20%, even when we worked on your music video, which was supposed to look kind of
bad,
like graphic, it still looked better when we like brought in like elements from the background.
The shots that Oren did looked better than the shots that I did. Basically is how it breaks down.
Yeah, and so the it's okay. New plugin bundle, it's called the VFX Suite from Red Giant, has this tool called Super Comp, and it is like it just makes everything work in After Effects in a way that I've never ever seen before. And they just have a bunch of like awesome, insanely cool new tools, like new glows and new everything. If you're doing anything remotely in the realm of sci-fi or even action, check out Red Giant's new VFX suite. They also have this one other thing, which is a huge VFX problem, which I know I'm hitting just a tiny slice of our listeners, but a lot of times when you shoot a movie, you're shooting in log color space, right? Because you want to keep all the color, and when you color correct it, you want it to look really great. But when you're adding elements like muzzle flashes or like explosions, those are usually shot in like Rec. 709, like a different color space. So those things never work together. And this bundle has like all these cool tools to let you combine those two things. And it's just been like one of the banes of my existence as a VFX artist forever that is all solved with this one thing. So,
Oren, I think this is...
I'm really excited about it.
It's not an unpaid endorsement. I think you're losing us money. Like, there's no reason for Red Giant to sponsor us.
Well, it's like Adobe. For the first sure. 2 years we did this podcast, I'm like, guys, just get the Adobe Creative Cloud package.
I'm impressed with your with everything you just said, which pretty much all went over my head.
Nerdy shit. Nerdy yeah. shit. Yeah.
Well, so the second thing, this is a podcast that came out like 2 years ago, but I've been researching these true crime podcasts. And have you guys heard of Up and Vanished?
Mm-mm.
It's I think they're on their third season now, but it's this podcast where this guy literally just knew that like true crime podcasts did well. So he's like, I'll just try make my own true crime podcast. He had no idea what to make it about. So he just like went to Google and typed in cold case. And he like in, I think he was in Atlanta or something. So, or in Michigan, wherever he lived, he put like cold cases in his state and he found like a few. Right? Like there was a website, top 10 cold, like it was the police website, cold cases in Michigan or wherever. And he found this website called Web Sleuth, and where people like private citizens are like investigating cold cases. And he like just asked if anyone knew about this, a few different cases. And he got a call from the main detective on one of the cases and got all the info. And he's like, I guess I'm making a podcast about this cold case. Anyway, he was going to make like 4 episodes. 22 episodes later, he solved the cold case.
Wow.
Up and Vanished.
That's cool.
A guy that has zero experience in investigating. I mean, he Googles just like you, the three of us.
Wow.
Anyway.
Up and Vanished.
Yeah. It's old, an oldie but a goodie, and I'm only one episode in, but I'm already really loving it.
Awesome. Zane.
I have two shows that I like. One is recent and one is not. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, great. So the recent one, this isn't really, everybody knows about
Game
it.
Game of Thrones.
No. But everybody knows about it, but I really think it's great. I don't really like most TV, even though
Fleabag
we're in
season
the
two.
Golden age of TV. But Dead to Me.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
I thought was really, really wonderful. I thought it had all the things one might want in a television show. Super smart, super funny. It has a visual style. There's a thriller aspect to it. It's just like really good writing. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of the times when you watch shows that are supposed to be great, you're like, this is really lazy writing. Like, mm-hmm. how did this like get like, past all those places? But yeah, I think that show's really great. And it's one of the only things recently I've been like, I really like this. Oh, as well as Escape at Dannemora is really wonderful as well. That was not my second one. Escape at Dannemora is great.
Who has Showtime? How do you guys all have Showtime?
Sister's ex-friend's parents login. I will give it to you when this is over.
I think you can also
I will not
sign
take
up.
That. Thanks.
It's worth it to sign up for like the free trial.
And just like...
I think you can get through it pretty quick.
Yeah. There's only like 6.
Yeah.
It's really
Can I tell you about Dead to Me real quick? The creator, Liz Feldman.
Yeah.
Movie, I think we used to write in SNL. She had a general meeting where she was told that she was going to like be presented a few different show ideas that the network had. And they were going to get her take on it. But she was like the last person after like they saw 10 other people. And they were like, you know, we're sick of our ideas. Do you have anything? And she like... had like a miscarriage like 2 weeks before, and like her cousin unexpectedly died like 3 weeks before, and she's like, well, what about like a grief dealing with grief and like a comedy about grief. And then she basically like just invented it.
How all
in the room.
Best things happen, it yeah. seems, or all the things that sell, at least. You've been working on it for 30 years. Say goodbye.
It's really good, though.
That's but really good. Oh, and the other thing is a show that was on. It started in 2011, called Enlightened. It was on HBO. It had two seasons.
It's a Mike White show, right?
It's a Mike White show. Mike White is my favorite writer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, it's why am I blanking?
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern. Thank you. Yeah, it's Laura Dern. Mike White's also in it. Molly Shannon's in it a bit. It is my favorite thing of anything that's ever existed. And everybody I've showed it to is like, fuck, that's amazing. And everybody I know that's seen it is like, yeah, that's one of my favorite things.
I need to watch that show.
It's magnificent. And it's only, the first season is like 10 episodes and the second season is 8 and they're 30 minutes long. It's like not even that much. And Mike White wrote every single episode by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some next level. So yeah, those are my couple.
Love it, Zane. Well, I've got two things. Have you guys seen the documentary City of Gold?
I have seen it.
It's the Jonathan Gold documentary.
Yeah. Oh, I saw it when City he was alive. Gun.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the year anniversary. And it's great. It's on Hulu right now.
That's
it's
nice.
It's just about...
is it about L.A. food? It's about L.A. food scene?
Yeah, L.A. food scene and basically Jonathan Gold's impact on Los Angeles and food criticism. Right. And
it's pretty
and culture.
Nuts. Like he made changed lives.
Tacos cool, right?
Yeah. Not only did he make tacos cool, but he was part of like a second wave of like food criticism where... You didn't just review hoity-toity restaurants.
Right. It's not just you Spago.
You taco trucks and stands and whatnot. Yeah, and then
he
because
discover
he reviewed
Koji?
Them.
Was
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And
Kogi? Koji?
Kogi. Kogi. Yeah.
I've been watching the Jon Favreau
yeah.
show with the Kogi guy. What's his name?
Roy Choi.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have, they have a fun little dynamic. The what? Chef show or something. Yeah. Something really generic.
It's pretty generic, yeah.
It's really generic. The best part about that show is the little animation they have in between. It's like wonderful.
They do. I don't know if you've I've only watched one episode, but they have the woman from Jit Lada. Her name is Jazz, and she's like cooking.
Oh, I haven't seen this one
And at one
yet.
Point, she just like chops up a jalapeno, and Favreau is like, you're not going to take the seeds out or anything? And she's like, nah. And just throws like an entire unseeded jalapeno into a blender, which is like, oh, that's why that shit is so hot.
Yeah.
I decided to make beans recently and I used a jalapeno and a couple serranos and I got a chemical burn from
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And holy shit, that's painful. Has that ever happened to you?
My wife just like wiped her eye like the first time we really cooked the jalapeno. And it was like just a tiny, tiny bit. You know, I think she maybe even washed her hands.
No, you like, can't. If you wash your hands, it doesn't get it off. Yeah, you have to put rubbing alcohol and you have to like scrub it off.
Yeah, it's no joke, but so delicious. And my last one, my last endorsement is Workflowy, which is a website that basically is just like nested bullet points.
Yeah.
Lists. You ever use it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lists. And it's awesome for outlining. I hadn't really had like
a
Workflowy.
Okay.
It's like great for outlining because you can like basically, you know, you build out your architecture of like, okay, like, you know, here's all my act breaks and then here are all my little scenes nested within each act and you can kind of move the scenes around and like throw any dialogue bits or anything. It's like just a nice clean
and you can like collapse
outlining and
I have one more really good one.
Yeah.
Script notes. Craig Mazin did an episode recently where he basically just tells you how to write a script.
How to write a script. I've heard about this. I haven't listened to it yet.
It's nuts. Like if you follow it, like you'll have a script.
You're good to go.
Yeah.
Wow, there you go.
I didn't feel like it was nuts, but it's very good.
Super good.
It's very Craig Mazin-y.
Here's the thing. Up until Chernobyl...
Oh, I mean, everything he's done has been terrible. I'm not saying that that's not true.
Not terrible. I like his stuff. I like him a lot, you know.
I think, yeah. I have an appreciation for him. I mean, everything he said, it was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I've never really heard it. Like, you know, so many things you know about writing, you just know innately. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's good to be like, oh, and then we're supposed to have that thing, that part's supposed to happen now. Okay, right. Just that's like have it in the back of your mind.
Intellectualized a little bit.
For me, the biggest takeaway is kind of his anti-intellectualizing of it, which is he's like, you look at screenplay structure and three acts and act breaks and all this stuff, and he's like, that's not how you write a like, that's how you analyze a screenplay, maybe. That's a result of good writing, but it doesn't lead to good writing.
Mm. Well, yeah, that's why I liked this perspective more. And I think the part that stuck with me is the idea that you have a character who has a life. It's he keeps using they have stasis, right? And then mm-hmm. something happens, and then they just want to go back to the stasis. And then at a certain point, you decide, oh no, I don't want to go back to that. I want this new thing. And that's all a movie is.
There you go.
I mean, that's kind of that's the gist of what he says.
That's pretty good.
And a scene, yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to learn about all of the stuff that we talked about, it's all in the show notes. We'll have a handful of Zane's movies, all of the links to her stuff, etc., etc. You can follow us across all social media at Just Shoot a Pot and me at Mr. Madelow.
And me at O'Kaplan on Instagram. And if you have any comments or anything, please email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com or call our voicemail number 1-262-SHOOT-1. We'd love to hear from people. And this episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe. It was produced by Madeline Rosewatt. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams, who's actually been doing a lot of fixing of our website.
Killing it.
Our website is in pretty good shape right now. Check it out, justshootitpod.com. The music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you next time. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.